Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Hey Amud Aleph, nine lines down. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the question that was raised on the Daf Dalet, which is, the cases in our Mishnah, how is it that the Ani and the Balabayit are Chayavin? Be'inen Akira Banacha me'al gabei makom arba'a al arba'a. We need the location from which the Akira and Anacha take place on Shabbat to be at least 4x4 Tvachim to be considered a makom Chashuv. The truth is, as we already noted, that there's really no source in the Gemara for the fact that you do require a place of Arba'a al Arba'a. It's taken as a given by the Gemara that that is the case. Tosafot tries to bring sources for the fact that maybe that is required or comes out of the Psukim. And so Gemara wants to know, how is it that our Mishnah doesn't have that requirement? The hand of an individual, the Balabait or the Ani, who are exchanging things in the Mishnah, neither of those are 4x4 Tvachim. So the first suggestion of the Gemara by Rabba was that it's Rabbi Akiva, who does not require Arba al Arba'a, and that's based on Rabbi Akiva's position that Kluta Kamisha Unchodamya, that an object in motion is considered to be as if it's making discrete movements throughout, and therefore you are Chayav when you throw something from a Rishut HaYachid to a Rishut HaYachid through a Rishut HaRabim. The Gemara rejected that because from Rabbi Akiva we only know that Hanacha, he does not require Arba al Arba Tfachim, but Akira, maybe he would require it. So the next suggestion was by Rav Yosef that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi He. And then the Gemara wanted to know, which Rabbi are we speaking about? The first attempt was that if someone throws something and it lands on this Ziz, some projectile, then you are Chayav according to Rabbi. And we thought maybe because that area is so small, maybe that says Rabbi does not require a Makom Arba Arba. And the Gemara says that that doesn't work because over there we explained that Rabbi was speaking about the branches of a tree, and Shtei Nufo Batar Ikaro, that the branches follow the trunk of the tree, and therefore the branches take on the qualities of the trunk, and they are bigger than they really are in reality. So then Gemara suggested maybe it's Rabbi who says if you throw something from Rishut Rabim to Rishut Rabim through a Rishut Yachid Ba'emtza, that you are Chayab. And then we said that doesn't work because Rav and Shmuel qualified that position of Rabbi and said it only applies when it's Mikureh, when there's a roof over it, because then it's Kibayit Mal Yodamya, it's as if the house is totally full, and that's why the object that goes through there is as if it stopped there and then continued onwards. Gemara says, okay, so we'll just assume that the case in our Mishnah is a case of Mikureh. Gemara says that works by Rishut Yachid, because a Rishut Yachid Mikureh exists. But for Rishut Rabim, you can't do that because there's no such concept as a Rishut Rabim Mikureh, because in the Midbar, the Degalim, or where we learn Rishut Rabim from, which is the Diglei Midbar, does not have a manifestation by which it's Mikureh. And given that, it cannot be the case that they're speaking about in the Mishnah. So now we're up to our third attempt as to who's the author or how we explain our Mishnah, and that's Ela Amir Rabbi Zera Hamani. The authorship of our Mishnah we can attribute to Acherim. It's based on this position of the Acherim. The Tanya, Acherim Omrim, the Acherim tell us, Amad Bim Komo. If the person was standing stationary, Viki Bel, and then he received the object, Chayav. The person who threw it is then Chayav. Akarmim Komo, if the person receiving the object moved from his place to intercept the item, Viki Bel, and he then caught it, he is Patur. The case that the Acherim are speaking about was where an individual throws an object. Now, the object has the Akira because the person launched the object. Then the object needs a Hanacha. If the receiving party doesn't move, then the Machshava of the individual who's throwing it is being carried out, and therefore there's an Akira and a Hanacha, and that will be Mechayev him. On the other hand, if the party that is receiving the object moves to intercept the object, then the Machshava of the individual who threw it is not carried out in its entirety because it was intercepted along the way. And that's why he is patur in that case. And the Gemara asks, Amad Bim Komo, when the individual is stationary and the object lands on them, Piki Bel, and they received it, Chayav, over there you are Chayav, Babin An Hanacha, Gabi Makom Dalet, Veleka. Don't you require a place that is at least 4x4 in order for there to be a Hanacha? And over here it's landing on the individual, whether it's into his hand or in his shoulder or in his head, wherever it lands, it doesn't have an allocation that is 4x4 Tvachim. Elish Mamina, from here you can conclude, Lo Bina Makom Arba'a, that they don't require a 4x4 location, and therefore their position, or they can be the authors of a Mishnah. Margan asks, V'dilma Hanachahu Du'o Ba'ina, that Breita only addresses a case of Hanacha, where it lands, Ha'akira Ba'ina. But maybe for Akira, you do require it. Similar to what we asked by Rabbi Akiva, maybe his position is only true when it comes to Anacha, but when it comes to Akira, you would have to be Okaret from 4x4, and our mission deals with cases of both Akira and Anacha. So you maybe solved the problem with regards to Anacha, you didn't solve the problem with regards to Akira, and the Baal Tosafot in yesterday's daf explained why they thought possibly there would be a distinction between Anacha versus Akira, because in the Mishkan, They used to take the objects that they were storing from their locations and then give it to the people who were doing the melacha. And therefore the akira came from their storage areas or their tevot, which were 4x4 tefachim. So maybe there you require akira by 4x4 tefachim because that's what was in the Mishkan. But hanacha, maybe you do not require. And the Gemara says, even by hanacha, I'm not sure your conclusion with regards to the achirim is correct. Hanacha nami dilmop to poshit kanfei vikibla. Who says that when he received it, that he caught it in his hand, or it landed on his head or his shoulder? Maybe he extended his tunic or his garment and made a trampoline for it to land on. And if that's the case, the ikanami hanacha. Then the hanacha happened in a place that was 4x4 tefachim, and so you can't prove anything from the achirim. And there we reject now our third attempt to find the authorship of our Mishnah. So Amar Rabbi Abba Matznita, and so here's the fourth attempt to figure out what is the position of our Mishnah, is Kagon. The situation is, the Girsa here is either Shekibel Betreskal, that he received it into a basket, or you could see in the Ot Aleph of the Bach, that the alternate Girsa was Sheakro, or Akre Mitreskal, that he took it out of a basket, Veiniach Agabe Treskal, and then he put it down in a Treskal. What it's saying is that the Ani and the Balabait in the Mishnah are not working with their hands, but they're rather working with baskets that are in their hands. And the baskets create an area that is 4x4, and therefore now you do have a Makom Chashuv that you can have the Akiran Hanacha being done to. So Treskal is either a wicker basket, or some of the Gonim describe it as a portable table that is used made out of wicker, but either way it has an area that is larger than your hand. And now you've created a scenario in which you have 4x4 tvachim, both for the Ani and the Balabait. Dikanami Hanacha. So therefore now you have an Akira and Hanacha. Mar says, Vaha Yadok Tani. Wait a minute, our Mishnah says that the Balabait and the Ani, using their hands, he took it from his hand, put it into his hand. It doesn't mention any basket in the Mishnah. Mar says, Tanei, Treskal should be Yadok. So whether that means in the Gemara, he mend the Mishnah to read that it, the basket that is in his hand, or it means that it's as if it's written the basket in his hand. When it says his hand, it doesn't mean his hand literally, it means whatever was in his hand that was functioning like the hand to be the receiving agent and to be the Akira that took place from there. Mar says, Ha tinach treskal b'shuta yachid. That solution is great when you're talking about the Balabait who's in the Reshuta Yachid, because in the Reshuta Yachid, the treskal functions as a Reshuta Yachid, and so it doesn't change anything. Ela treskal should be Reshuta Rabim. When you have a basket in a Reshuta Rabim, Reshuta Yachidu, that changes it from a Reshuta Rabim into a Reshuta Yachid. And that is because we're going to see upcoming in the Gemara, as always, the Gemara assumes you know information that's only going to be presented later in the Gemara. The areas of Reshuta Yachid and Reshuta Rabim have definitions which are important. Reshuta Yachid is an area that has to be at least 4x4 tvachim, and it has to have mechitzot around it, or it has to be elevated at least 10 tvachim. On the other hand, Reshuta Rabim is an open area. We'll see some of the qualifications of what you need in order for it to be a Reshuta Rabim, but one of them is that it can't be an independent area in the Reshuta Rabim that the public does not use or does not traverse. And therefore, if you have an area that is at least 4x4 tvachim in the Reshuta Rabim that is distinct from the Reshuta Rabim, that means it's above 3 tvachim and below 10 tvachim. If you have an area that's at least 4x4 tvachim, then it becomes a Carmelite. And if it's above 10 tvachim, it becomes a Reshuta Yachid when it's 4x4 tvachim. And so that's what the Gemara is saying now. When the Ani is standing in the Reshuta Rabim and he has a basket in his hand, that basket has the qualification to make it into a Reshuta Yachid. It's at least 4x4 tvachim, because that's why we're using the basket to gain us that area. And now you have a 4x4 tvachim area in the Reshuta Rabim. And that changes it into a Reshuta Yachid. If that's the case, then the Balabait, when he takes something from inside and places it into the basket of the Ani outside, he hasn't done anything. He's gone from Reshuta Yachid to Reshuta Yachid. So why is there a problem? Lema delok Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. Let us say that then our Mishnah is stating otherwise, and that it's not classified as a Reshuta Yachid, d'tanya. Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda omer, na'atz kaneh b'Reshuta Rabim, person who puts up a pole or some sort of stake in the Reshuta Rabim, ubrosho treskal, and at its top of it, it has a basket, zarak, if you threw something from the Reshuta Rabim, v'nachal gabav, and it lands in that basket, you are chayav. Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda is giving us a chiddush that, first of all, if you have an area that's 4x4 tvachim, that's above 10, it is considered or classified as a Reshuta Yachid. The chiddush over here is that even though the base that is holding up the basket is not 4x4 tvachim, nevertheless, the basket that is suspended or held up by this stake makes it into a reshut hayachid, because you have 4x4 tvachim that's above 10 tvachim, and therefore it is a reshut hayachid. And then if you throw something from the reshut harabim into that basket, it'll be the equivalent of going from reshut harabim to reshut hayachid. But given that, then how can you explain our Mishnah that the ani is holding a basket that is 4x4 tvachim, that make it into a reshut hayachid? And if you tell me that it's not, that means that our Mishnah does not follow this position of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Ikar Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, if you were following that position of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, Pashat Balabayit Yadol Lachutz, when the Balabayit sticks his hand out, and Natan Latoch Yadol Shel Ani, and places it into the basket of the Ani, Amai Chayav. Why should he be Chayav there? It's Mirishut Yachid, the Rishut Yachid Kamafik. He's taking it from Mirishut Yachid, his house, and placing it into the basket of the Ani, which according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, is a Rishut Yachid. So he hasn't done anything, there is no Hotza'ah now. So why should he be Chayav in the Mishnah? Gemara says, Afilu Teimer Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. This doesn't necessarily have to be at odds with that position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Hotam the Mala Miyud. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's position, as he states, is that it's above 10 Tvachim. Haka, the Mishnah, speaking about a case where the Mata Miyud, where it's below 10 Tvachim. And that is because the Reshut Rabim only exists up to 10 Tvachim high. It is from the ground level, where there is an area that is deemed to be Reshut Rabim, until 10 Tvachim high. Above 10 Tvachim, as we're going to see later in the Gemara, is considered to be a Makom Patur. So there, where you have the basket above the Reshut Rabim, then you can create a Reshut Yachid. It's 10 Tvachim high, it's above the area of the Reshut Rabim, and you have an area that is 4x4 Tvachim. That's what, according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, creates the Reshut Yachid in the middle of the Reshut Rabim. On the other hand, if you have a 4x4 Tvachim space in the Reshut Rabim that is below 10 Tvachim, above 3 Tvachim and below 10 Tvachim, it doesn't become a Reshut HaYachid. And that's the case in our Mishnah, that the basket takes on the character of the area that it's in because it is below 10 Tvachim, and it's considered to be part of the Reshut Rabim, but it's a Makom Chashu because it has 4x4 Tvachim. The Baal Tosafot question the answer of the Gemara over here, because even though below 10 Tvachim it's not considered to be a Reshut HaYachid, it still should be classified as a Karmelit. As we noted before, a Karmelit is an area that has a status of problem midrabanan. It's an area that is not a Reshut Yachid, not a Reshut Rabim, but it has traits that make it that even though it is a Reshut Yachid, it is similar to a Reshut Rabim, and therefore they created this in-between zone called the Karmelit, by which you can't carry from Reshut Yachid to a Karmelit, or from a Karmelit to Reshut Yachid, and same with the Reshut Rabim. It becomes this third area of Isur on Shabbat. And one of the qualifications for a Karmelit is it has to be a minimum of 4x4 Tvachim, and it has to be below 10 Tvachim. Well, that's exactly what you have now. You have a basket in the Reshut Rabim that is 4x4 Tvachim, below 10 Tvachim, and it is a Karmelit. And that's what Tosafot says. I don't understand the solution of the Gemara. You're right, it's not a Reshut Yachid, but it's also not a Reshut Rabim. It's actually a Karmelit. So Tosafot invokes Rashi later in the Masechta that says that a Kli cannot become a Karmelit. Karmelit is only an area, and it can't be a utensil that becomes a Karmelit. And over here, since we're speaking about a basket, the basket doesn't become a Karmelit and remains Reshut Rabim, even though it's 4x4 Tvachim. Then the Tosafot continues on to challenge the whole questioning of the Gemara over here from Rabbi Yossi by Rabbi Yehuda. And he says, what was the questioner thinking? Because even without the question of Rabbi Yossi by Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah has to be speaking about below 10 Tvachim, because as we noted already, there's no such thing as a Reshut Rabim above 10 Tvachim. It's a Makom Patur. So in order to be Chayav in our Mishnah, we're obviously speaking about an area that's below 10 Tvachim. And below 10 Tvachim, it's obvious that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda doesn't believe you create a Reshut Yachid below 10 Tvachim. Because that's the qualification for a Reshut Yachid. It has to be a minimum of 4x4 by 10 high. Now 10 high can either be because it's elevated, or it can be that it's dug into the ground and there are mechitzot around it, or it's in a chatzer where there are mechitzot of 10 Tvachim around it. But you need those 10 Tvachim in order for it to be classified as a Reshut Yachid. So over here, what was the Havamina to think that our Mishnah and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda are in contradiction, because the Mishnah is clearly below 10 Tvachim in order to be a Reshut Rabim, and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is obviously above 10 Tvachim in order to be a Reshut Yachid. So Tosafot just leaves it as an open issue as to why the Gemara even entertained this issue with Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, and why it was necessary to bring him in order to tell us that the Mishnah is speaking about a case of below 10 Tvachim. So now we've come up with a solution as to the case in the Mishnah, as to how you have a Makom Dalet al Dalet for the Akiran Anacha, and that's because they're using baskets in their hands, both the Balabait and the Ani. Umar says, Kashale the Rabbi Abo. Rabbi Abo is still bothered by this solution, because Mik Tanei Treskal should be Ado. The The Mishnah doesn't say the basket in his hand. It says, Hayadok Tani. It says his hand. He's basically going back to what the Gemara originally asked, which is the Mishnah says hand and not basket. And even if you want to amend the Mishnah or say that's what the Mishnah meant, it still doesn't say that. And in the end, it's his hand. Alamar Rabbi Bo. So Rabbi Bo says, Kagon Shishilsho Yodol Lamata Migimel. It's a case where your hand is within three tefachim of the ground. And that is a principle in halacha that anything that's within three tefachim of another object is lavud. It's considered to be as if the space doesn't exist, and it's as if the object is found on whatever it is proximate to within three tefachim. That is true both in elevation, meaning something that is below three tefachim is considered to be on the ground. Something above three tefachim can separate away from the ground, as well as in width or length. For instance, by sukkah or by mechitzot for Shabbat, when you have stakes that are less than three tefachim away from each other, we see the empty space between them as if it doesn't exist. So similarly over here, if the hand of the individual is below three tefachim, it's as if it's on the ground. So here it's a case that the ani put his hand within three tefachim of the ground, v'kibla, and then he received whatever the balabait was giving to him. In that case, it's as if he put it directly into the reshut rabim. His hand is not distinct from the ground. It's not distinct from the reshut rabim. And therefore, you don't need a 4x4 space in his hand because his hand now becomes the ground itself because it's within three tefachim of the ground. So when it says, va omeid ktani, doesn't it say in the Mishnah, ani omeid bachutz u balabait bifnim, that they're actually standing? When it says, bishoche, where he's bent over. Yeah, he's standing. He's on his legs, but he is bending over to put his hand down towards the ground. Vi baiteima beguma. Or the other possibility is that he's inside of a ditch of some sort by which he is standing totally upright, but his hand is still within three tefachim of the ground on the surfaces that are around the ditch that he's in. As the Baal Tosafot point out, the ditch itself has to be classified as a reshut rabim. It's not enough that his hand outside of the ditch is near the reshut rabim to make it into reshut rabim. It has to be the ditch itself is classified as a reshut rabim, and that is either because rabim mishtamshim bo, it's an area that the public at large uses or utilizes, and therefore it's still considered to be part of the Reshut Rabim. And even though it's not easy to use it or easy access it, but nevertheless, since they do use it, or in times when they need it, they do use it, that's enough to deem it as a Reshut Rabim. Because if the Guma was either a Karmelit or a Makom Ptur, and his body was inside of it, and his hand was extended out to the Reshut Rabim, his hand would not be classified as a Reshut Rabim, because his hand would be governed by where his body is. Even if his hand's within three tefachim, the Reshut Rabim, because the hand may attach to the body is drawn after the body, because as the Baal HaTosafot explained in the previous Tosafot, according to Rabbi Abahu, probably both the Ani and the Baal HaBayit have their hands below three tefachim. If that's the case, then even if the Baal HaBayit put it into the Ani's hand, and his hand is below three tefachim in the Reshut Yachid, and then the Ani pulls it out, and then he's in the Reshut Rabim, then the Ani would be chayav in that case, because he did the Akira as well, because his hand was below three tefachim, and it would be batel to the Reshut Yachid. The fact that we don't say that shows you that the attachment of the hand to the body is significant, and even when your hand is below three tefachim in the Reshut Yachid, if your body's in the Reshut Rabim, that's not classified as a Reshut Yachid. And therefore, when the Baal HaBayit does the Akira and places it into the hand of the Ani, and then the Ani takes it out into the Reshut Rabim, they're Shnehem Pturim because neither of them did the entire Melocha. Even though the Ani's hand was below three Tfachim in the Reshut Yachid, it's not deemed to be a Reshut Yachid for the Ani because he's standing in the Reshut Rabim. And therefore, when he pulls it out, it's only half the Melocha, the Hanacha, not the Akira as well. And so given that, Tosfot says that if you're standing in a ditch and your hand is outside, you're driven by your body, not by your hand. So it has to be a case where the ditch itself is also qualified or classified as a Reshut Rabim. Vibai Tema, or another possibility is Binanas. We're talking about a midget, and therefore he's standing up, and his hand is still within three tefachim of the ground. Amarova Ichpiltana Leshminan Kohane. The whole Mishnah is built around these crazy cases whereby either the person's bent over with his hand within three tefachim of the ground, he's standing in a ditch, or he's a midget. That's what the Mishnah is speaking about? That makes it an unusual case. The Mishnah doesn't go out of its way to explain these oddities in terms of cases when it's trying to convey halacha. Elama Rava, so in the end, Rava says, Yado shel adam chashuva lo kedalet al dalet. The real solution to the problem here is that a person's hand gains extraordinary significance. Even though it isn't physically 4x4 tvachim, it's granted the status as if it has 4x4 tvachim, and because we view the hand as being something of significance, it's elevated to the status as if it has 4x4 tvachim, and therefore you don't need any exogenous items to create the 4x4 tvachim. The hand itself is classified as a 4x4. V'chein kiata rav in amr of Yochanan. That's from Rava in Bavel. Now we have a similar memra that's brought by Ravin from Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael. Yadol shel adam chashuv lo kedalet al dalet. That the person's hand has a status as if it is 4x4 tvachim.
And even though, as the Balei Tosafot pointed out in yesterday's daf, Divrei Matchil Ela, the Gemara in Erevin says in many places that you can be machshiv any location to have a status of being like 4x4 tefachim. So what's the chiddush of the Gemara here, or of Rav over here, that you can have your hand be 4x4 tefachim? So the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the cases in Erevin where it works for you to classify it or be machshiv it as 4x4 tefachim is a situation or circumstance where that is the only way that you'll be satisfied or happy with the object being received into that location. Nothing else would be sufficient or work for you. Over here, where there are other ways where you could take the object, place it in there, you could receive it, take the object out, it just happens to be that your hand as well as one of those functions, that's not considered to be akshave because you have other alternatives, and those other alternatives would have been just as good for you. And so therefore over here, it's a special din in Yad that has a din of 4x4 tvachim, even though you're not explicitly being machshivit like that which is said in the Gemara Erevin, and that's why it's different than that Gemara in Erevin, where it's only because of the akshave and the unique position that that akshave gives to the object that makes it that you can have an akira and a hanacha off of something that's less than 4 tefachim. Over here, it's a generic rule with regards to a hand. Amar Rabbi Avin, Amar Rabbi Eloi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zarak chefetz benach betoch yado shel chaveiro, person who throws an object and it lands in the hand of his friend, chayav. Ma'ikam Ashmalan, what is that teaching us? Yado shel adam, chashuvalo kedalet al dalet. It's teaching us the same din that we just saw before from Rabbi Yochanan, that the hand is considered to be by 4x4 tefachim, and therefore when the object lands in the hand of his friend, that's considered to be hanacha. V'amrei Rabbi Yochanan chadazimno. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan already tell us that information? Why do we need Rabbi Yochanan to convey the same piece of information in two different ways? Ma detein ma, I would have thought hani milehechid da akshava hu liyadei. That's only true when it's his own hand. By his own hand, he can claim that the hand has disproportionate significance because he had in mind that he's using his hand, or he's receiving in his hand, and therefore, it would have a status of a 4x4 tevachim. But in a situation where it lands on his friend's hand, and his friend had no active participation in the akira and hanacha, maybe over there it doesn't gain that added significance of being 4x4 tevachim. Maybe there it wouldn't have a status, or outsized status. Kamash Malan, that it still does have that status of being 4x4 tevachim, even though the person wasn't actively involved in the akira or the hanacha. Amar Rabbi Avin, Amar Rabbi Eloi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar bimkomo bikibel chayav, Akar bimkomo bikibel patur. If the person was stationary and it landed in his hand, the person who threw it there is chayav. If the person who is receiving it intercepted it and received it, then he is patur. Tanya Nami Hochi, that's similar to the Braita that we brought before, which is the Achirim Omim, Amad Bimkomo Bikibel Chayav, Akar Bimkomo Bikibel Patur. Similar to what we saw before in the Braita, when the person is stationary, then the person who threw it is both culpable for the Akira and the Hanacha, because the person who is stationary acts as if he is part and parcel, an extension of whatever reshut it is that he's standing in, and that's why you are Chayav. Whereas if the person intercepts it, then he becomes the hanacha because he's now changed the trajectory of the object, and the machshava, the person who threw it, hasn't been carried out to its entirety, and therefore he only did akira, but not the hanacha, and that's what we saw before in the Acherim, and that breita is supportive of what we're hearing from Rabbi Yochanan as well. By Rabbi Yochanan, Zarak chefetz v'ne'akar hu mimkomo, the person threw an object, and then he ran, v'chazar v'kiblo, and then he intercepted it or caught it, mahu, what is the din with regards to that? Makami bailei. What's the question over here? Two aspects within a single individual is the question. Do we say that when you have two kochot, meaning both the akira and the hanacha, that comes from a single individual, it is considered as if it's one person, v'chayav, and therefore you are chayav, so that the intercepting of the object when you catch it is what you intended for originally. So even though you're doing the action of two parties here, you're doing the akira and the hanacha, nevertheless, since it's two actions, but it's done by a single individual, it's considered as if your intent is being carried out to its fullest extent, and therefore you did both the akira and the hanacha, and you are chayav. Odilma kishnei bnei dam dami, or maybe you're considered like two people or two individuals, and as we saw before, if an individual intercepts the object,
then that's not a hanacha that carries out the full intent of the person who threw it. If that's the case, then the akiran hanacha are considered to be separate and not from a single individual, upatur, and then you would not be chayav, you would be patur of alasur. Teiku, we leave that as an unresolved issue. That is the girsa that we have in our Gemara. If you turn the page, the Rabbeinu Hananel has a different version of the Gemara that is just the opposite, which is, if we say that he is considered to be like Adam Echad, he's considered to be like a single individual, then he would be patur, because it would be no different than him passing something from his left hand to his right hand. And if you pass something from your left hand to your right hand, you're not chayav for hotza'ah or haknasah, because you're just passing something within your body that's not called carrying. And similarly over here, if you throw it and then you catch it and you're considered to be an Adam Echad, then you'd be patur. On the other hand, if you're considered to be the Shnei Bnei Adam, you'd be chayav, because then you're releasing it from yourself and receiving it as if you are two different individuals, and you'd be chayav. So he has the chayav and patur reversed in the Gemara, and he explains that to mean whether the individual is considered to be passing to himself or passing to another party. Amar Rabbi Avi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ichnis yado l'toch chatzer chaveiro v'kibel mei gishamim. Person who sticks his hand into his friend's chatzer, and then he captures rain, v'hotzi, and then he takes it back out into the reshut rabim, chayav for hotza'ah, matkiv la Rabbi Zeiro. Malihitino chaveiro, malihitino shamayim. Ihulo avid akira. I don't understand the difference between this and our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, the individual, the Ani, sticks his hand inside to the balabait, and then the balabait puts an object into the Ani's hand. The Ani is not chayav there for hotza'ah, because the akira was done by the balabait. It was placed into the hand by the balabait, and therefore the Ani didn't do the akira. Similar over here, if the rain comes down from the heavens into the hand of the individual, so of course he didn't put it into his hand, somebody else didn't put it in his hand, but Kodesh Baruch Hu, or the heavens put it into his hand, and therefore the heavens did the akira, and he's only doing the hanacha. And so why should he be chayav over here? So the Gemara says, Lotema kibel. Don't say that he captured rain that was falling into his hand, ela kalat, that he gathered the rain, as Rashi describes over here. The assumption is that there is a flow of water that's coming down, and he's using one hand to deflect it into his other hand. So he's actually the cause of the akira over here. Gemara says, Vabina nakira, malgabe makom dalid veleka. Don't we know, based on the Gemara we saw until now, that you need the object to be removed from an area that it's at least 4x4 tefachim, and you don't have that now because the water is coming into his hand by being deflected by the other hand, and so the water is not being released from an area or taken from an area that is 4x4 tefachim, and therefore you'd still have a failure in the akira. So Rav Chiya b'Rei d'Rav Huna kegon shekalat al gabei kotel. It's a case where he's capturing the water or collecting the water from a wall. So Gemara says, al gabei kotel nami. It's on top of the wall. Halo nach. It was never static that it be considered that you're doing akira. Akira means you're taking something and now uprooting it and moving it. So how do you have an akira here if you're collecting it off the wall or being deflected off the wall? Kedame rava bekotel mishupa. Talking about a wall that has a slope to it. That's an answer to another question, which we're going to see in a second. Hachanami, so too in our case over here, we're speaking about a case where it is a kotel mishupa. It's a wall that is on a slant. And so when it's on the wall that's parallel to him when he's capturing the rain, the rain is still not in a place where it's gathering or it's pooled or that it has a hanacha. It just happens to be that it was on the wall instead of in the air or in his hand. So then that doesn't change the status. So the Gemara's answer is that it is bekotel mishupa. We're dealing with a wall that's on an incline or decline. And therefore the rain, even though it may be still moving, it still has gathered on a location that is 4x4 tefachim. And since it's 4x4 tefachim, that's considered to be a makom chashuv for it to be a hanacha. And then if you oker it from there, that would be classified as an akira.
At this point, it does not seem to be that the Gemara requires the object to be static or stationary in order for there to be hanacha, because the Gemara is going to ask that question later on in the sugya. So at this point, the Gemara is assuming just because it's on the wall, that might be enough to be classified as nach, versus the case where you're deflecting it into your hand. So then the Gemara says, what's the difference between the rain being deflected into your hand or coming off of the wall when it's just on the side of a wall, which is upright? So that's where the Gemara answers that it's a kotel mishupa. It's on a slant, so therefore it's landing on a location that is much broader of 4x4 tefachim. And again, it might still be in motion, but it now has reached some sort of destination that's 4x4 tefachim that's different than your hand deflecting it into your other hand.
V'heichit mar d'Rava, where is the original statement of Rava dealing with a wall that is on an incline? Ahad, it's not. It's from the Mishnah in Eruvin. Haya Koreb Sefer, if he was reading a Megillah, Megillah is because all of the scrolls in their day were written like a Megillah. They were wound onto themselves. A Sefer Torah was different because it had two handles, but most of them were written like Megillahs and had only one handle. So he has the Sefer in his hand, and then it unrolls or unravels itself. Ali Skopa. But he was standing on a perch or a porch that is in front of his house. As Rashi notes over here, the Gemara in Erevin explains that that's an Iskopat Karmelit. It's an area that is not a Rishut Yachid and not a Rishut Arabim, which means that it's more than 3 tefachim high, and it's 4x4 tefachim wide, but not 10 tefachim high, because otherwise it would be a Rishut Yachid. Or Rashi explains in Erevin that it was 10 tefachim high, but it was an area that the Rabim went on a lot, and therefore it doesn't have a din of a Rishut Yachid. And so therefore you're dealing with a Rishut Dirabanan, and it unwound beneath Galgela Sefer Miyado, and it unraveled from his hand, then it's now lying out towards the Rishut Rabim. Go to low, it's low. We let you roll it back towards you, even though a portion of the Sefer is found in Rishut Rabim, because it's still in your hand, or the other half of it is still in your hand. On the other hand, if you're on the top of the roof, and it needs Galgela Sefer Miyado, and it unraveled from you, and now it landed down in the Rishut Rabim, it's still above 10 tefachim of the Rishut Rabim, go low, it's low. Then you're allowed to roll it back to yourself. And if it's within 10 tefachim of the ground, then you can't roll it back anymore. You have to flip it over and leave it there to protect it from being ruined, but you can't roll it back. The difference being is that by the iskopa, that you're dealing with a Rishut Rabbanan. And even if it totally left your hand, and you brought it from the Rishut Rabim back into the iskopa, you'd only be in violation of an Issur Rabbanan, you wouldn't be in violation of Issur Doraita. Therefore, when it unravels and goes into the Rishut Rabim, we let you, as long as you're still holding it, we lechatchila let you roll it back to yourself. On the other hand, when you're on the Gag, which is a Rishut Yachid, and the Sefer unravels down towards the Rishut Rabim, if it's above 10 tefachim, as we said before, the limit of the Rishut Rabim is 10 tefachim high, and therefore it's still in a makom tour, and therefore we let you roll it back up. On the other hand, if it goes below 10 tefachim, then it's classified as being in the Rishut Rabim. There we're not going to let you roll it back. Even though in the circumstance you're in right now, it would be totally fine to roll it back. Our fear is in a case where it left your hand, and then you want to bring it back, you can then bring it back from Rishut Rabim to Rishut Yachid, which is an Issur Doraita. There we don't give you permission to do it, and we avoid that by putting a Takanat Chachamim in place that doesn't let you roll it back. Why does he have to flip it onto the Ktav and he can't roll it back to himself? Halonach. Never reached a point of Hanacha in Rishut Rabim. Even if it's below 10 Tfachim, it's in the Avir of the Rishut Rabim, but it's still not resting in Rishut Rabim. Why should there be a problem to bring it back to yourself? Even if it was detached from you and you brought it back, you would not be chayav, because it never rested in the Rishut Rabim. Bamarova bekoto mishupa. We're dealing with a wall that is on a slant that goes into the Rishut Rabim, and therefore the roll or the scroll landed in the Rishut Rabim below 10 tefachim on a wall that's on a slant, and therefore it does come to rest, or the part that is released from you has come to rest, and if you pulled it back, it would be problematic if it had already detached from you, and you were bringing it totally from the Rishut Rabim to the Rishut Yachid. So to over here, we won't let you do it, even though it's still in your hand, because of that possibility. Tosfos just points out that the Ri says that the wall here is still considered to be Rishut Rabim, even though you can't walk on it, is because it's an area that people use to adjust their loads. And that's one of the things that makes something into Rishut Rabim, is when the Rabim uses it, even if they're not walking on it or traversing it, if they use it to unload or reload their packs or their burdens, then that's also considered to be a part of the Rishut Rabim, because they actively use it. And so that's what he suggests here. This wall on a slant is being actively used by individuals to adjust their loads, and that's why it's considered to be a Rishut Rabim.
Although the Ramban just says that because it's in the Avir Rishut Rabim, it has a din like the Rishut Rabim, even if it's a kotel on a slant, because it's the airspace of Rishut Rabim.
So, Imor Dama Rava B'Sefer David Denayach. Wait a minute. Rava's idea of a kotel mishupa makes sense when you're dealing with a Sefer, because a Sefer comes to rest on an area that is on a slant. Mayim mi'avide denayachi. Since when does water come to rest? Yes, the water is on the wall when it's mishupa, but when it's mishupa, the water continues to be in movement. How can you call that a hanacha? Elo amar Rava kagon shekalat me'algavei guma. It's a case where he collected it from a water pool that was in a ditch there. Where it says, guma pshita. If he takes it out of water, or collects water out of a ditch, then of course he's taking something from Rishut Yachid to Rishut Rabim. What's the question now? Where it says, ma'udateima. What I would have thought is, ma'im algavei ma'im lav hanachahu. Maybe the water that's sitting on top of other water in the ditch is not considered to be at rest because it's on top of water. Maybe in order to be at rest, you need to be in contact with the ground. and water that sits on top of water is not considered to be at rest. Kamash Malan, that is considered to be at rest and a hanacha, and therefore when you're oker water from water, that's considered to be an akira. How's the Rava the Tamei? And this answer of Rava as to what the scenario is here with regards to the case of Rabbi Yochanan, where you're collecting the water in the Rishut Yechid and bringing it out to Rishut Rabim, is in consonance with another position that he notes, which is Dama Rava, Mayim al gabei Mayim. When you have water that's on top of other water, Hainu hanachatan, then the water is considered to be at rest there. It goes al gabei Mayim, if you have a nut that's floating in the water, Lav Hainu hanachato. That's not considered to be at rest because it's floating through the water. And therefore, if you take the egos out of the water, that would not be considered akira. As opposed to when you take water out of water, that would be considered to be an akira. Bayirova, egos bikli, bikli tzaf al gabi amayim. What happens if you have a nut that is sitting inside of a utensil, and then the utensil is floating on the water? Batar egos azlinan vanaich. What do we look at here? Do we look at the nut? And the nut, as far as it's concerned, is stationary inside of the kli. And therefore, if you take it out of the kli, maybe that should be considered an akira. Odilma batar kli azlinan. Pahalo naich denied. And then it's not at rest because it floats along the top of the water. Do we look at the egos as being a part and parcel of the utensil, and the utensil's floating on the water, and therefore maybe there's no akira over here? Teiku. We'll leave that as an unresolved issue. Now, the Balei Tosafot point out that this is a unique din in Shabbat, because with regards to Kinyanim, the Gemara in Bava Metzia says that when you have a boat that is floating along the top of the water, the boat is not considered to be a chatzer hamahalechet. It's not considered to be a moving chatzer, because the water is moving, but the boat is considered to be a stationary area, and therefore you can make a kinyan there, or your chatzer can make a kinyan on your behalf. Because as the Balei Tosafot would say, we learned chatzer from yad, and just like your yad is considered to be not a moving object, but rather a stationary object for a kinyan, so too the boat has the same din as your chatzer as not being a moving object. But by Shabbat, where we learn from the Mishkan, it has to be the way that it was done in the Mishkan. And then the question is, kederach shematzniim chavatzim b'nei adam? What's the normal way that people store things? So is it considered to be normal to have a nut in a utensil that's floating on the water? Is that the normal way of storage? And therefore you'll have a different din in Choshen Mishpat than you will have in Or HaChaim. In Choshen Mishpat, it's considered to be an area that's a chatzer, the she'ena malechet. Whereas over here in Shabbat, it'll be considered to be an object that's in motion, because by Shabbat, the din is governed by what's the normal way that people store things or the way it was done in the Mishkan. Whereas by Choshen Mishpat, the din of Kinyanim, it has to do with whether the object is similar to your hand or not. Rabbi Kiv Eger thinks that the Balei Tosafot's whole premise for connecting the boat to the hand is somewhat precarious, because the whole reason that your hand is not considered to be a chatzer malechet is because it's attached to your body. And so just like your hand or your arm can't walk away without your body, that's why it's not considered to be a chatzer malechet. That's not necessarily true when it comes to a boat, because it has to be an object that can't leave you or can't move away from you. So chatzer she'ena malechet means a stationary property that can't walk off without you. But that's not true of a boat, and therefore the Rabbi Kiv Eger questions the whole correlation that the Balei Tosafot make between the person's hand and the chatzer malechet for a boat. Now the Gemara says, shemen shetzaf al gabi mayim. If you have oil that floats on top of wine, the only reason we're using wine here is because of the machloka they're going to bring afterwards, but it could be true of oil that floats on top of any other liquid, because oil separates away from other liquids and floats on top. So the question is, when you have oil on top of another liquid, is it considered to be part and parcel of the liquid below, and therefore when you pick up the shemen, you're being akira, or is it considered to be separate from the liquid below, and therefore there's no akira that's happening over here? And that, they say, is a machloka Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Rabbanon. It's subject to the machloka Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Rabbanon, in the world of Truma. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Truma. Shemen shetzaf al gabei yayin. If you have shemen of Truma that's floating on top of wine of Truma, nagat tvul yom b'shemen, and the tvul yom, who's a sheni the Tuma, touches the shemen on top, is Truma, and can accept a shlishi the Tuma, then the tvul yom can ruin the shemen on top. Lo pasal al shemen bilvad. He only affects the oil, not the wine below. That means that the Chachamim believe that the wine and the yayin are considered to be separate entities, and so therefore touching the shemen is not as if you touch the wine. And by the dinim of Truma, a tvul yom, who's a sheni the Tuma, makes the Truma into a psul, or into a shlishi the Tuma, but it's the end of the line of Tuma. Therefore, the shemen doesn't pass that Tuma to the yayin. Now, that's only true of a tvul yom, because a tvul yom has a special status within the world of Truma, that whatever he touches, when he's a sheni the Tuma, makes a shlishi the Tuma. On the other hand, if it was any other Tuma that was a sheni, we have a rule that we saw in the Gemara in Brachot, that elevates the liquids back to a Rishon the Tuma. And if they were a Rishon the Tuma, the Shemen, then they would affect the Yayin below. So that's why it's uniquely associated with a Tvul Yom over here. And obviously, Gemara thinks that Shemen is a liquid because that's why it had to use Tvul Yom and not another form of Sheni the Tumah. But from the Chachamim, you see that they view the Shemen and Yain as being separate entities. And so too by Shabbat, they'll be separate entities, and then there won't be an Akira of the Shemen when you remove it from the Yain. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri omer shnehem mechubarim zeh lazeh, they're considered to be a single entity, like water on top of water. And if that's the case, then if you touch the Shemen, the Yain also becomes Tameh. And for Shabbat, if you're Oker the Shemen, that would be considered to be an Akira, because you're removing it from the Yain that it's attached to. Amar Rabbi Avin, Amar Rabbi Eli, Rabbi Yochanan. So we have a member from this same group of Amoraim. Rabbi Avin in the name of Rabbi Eli, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Ataun ochlim umashkim. A person had liquids and food that were on his back that he was carrying around. V'nichnas yotzei kol hayom kulo. If he's walking in and out of the Rishut Rabin to Rishut Yachid all day long, enu chayav ad shiamot. Person is not chayav until they stop and they're stationary. That is because as long as you're in motion, there's no akira and hanacha. And absent an akira and hanacha, you can't be chayav for hotza'a or for hachnasa. So the situation, as Rashi notes over here, has to be where the person originally had the intent to carry it from one side of his house to the other side of his house, which is not problematic on Shabbat. Then he changed his mind and then continued walking out to the Rishut Rabim. So there you never had an akira with the intent to take it out. It was an akira that was done to do it inside your house. And therefore, if you don't stop anywhere along the way, you don't have an hanacha that then generates an akira afterwards that will make you chayav for hotza'a or haknasa. Amar Rabaye, when you say it la'amod, it means shu'amad afush, where he stopped to rest. Only if he came to a stationary position where he's resting, is that considered to be hanacha. And then when you start up again, that'll be considered an akira. That goes back to what we saw on Daf Gimel, that akirat gufo is considered to be akirat chayfetz. When you move your body, it's considered to be an akira for the chayfetz. That only is true when you come from a stationary point, a point where you've had a hanacha with your body and the object on it, then when you start walking, is in an akira. And that's now what Rabbi Yochanan told us. It has to be that you stopped in order to have a hanacha that will allow for an akira that will make you chayav. And by it qualifies that and says it has to be a type of hanacha where you stop to rest. It can't be that you're just stopping to adjust the load because that's considered to be as if you're still in motion and you haven't stopped. Mimai, how does he know this? Midam Ramar, Toch Dal Ramot Amad Lafush. If an individual was carrying Rishut Rabim, to be chayav for carrying Rishut Rabim, you have to carry at least 4 Amot in Rishut Rabim. If he stops to rest, then he is patur, because then he never carried in a single motion the 4 amot, because he stopped before the 4 amot. Likateif, if he stopped within 4 amot to adjust the load, and then continued on outside of the 4 amot, chayav, then he's chayav. That's not considered to be a stop, ahanachan and akira. Never, it's as if he walked the 4 amot in one shot. Kotzle dal amot, if he walks, and then he carries more than dal amot in Rishut Rabim, amad lafush, if he stops to rest, then he's chayav, because now you have a hanacha in the Rishut Rabim. Likateif, if he stops just to adjust the load, he's patur, because over there, that's not considered as if you stopped, and therefore it's still as if you're in motion. As long as you're in motion, there's no hanacha to make you chayav for the akira and the hanacha. Maika mashmalan, shlo hayta akira misha rishona. Shlo hayta akira misha rishona lekach. So what did Rabbi Yochanan come to teach us with this whole din over here? He's coming to teach you that there was never an akira in the first place to be for the intent of doing hotza'ah. That is because when he loaded it onto his body, it was done in a situation or circumstance where he never intended to take it out to the Rishut Rabim. And when he changes his mind, that's what creates the necessity for a new akira, a hanacha and akira. And that fails over here if he continues to walk around and never stops. So Gemara says, if that's what he's going to teach us, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Charazimna. We already have this memra from Rabbi Yochanan. Amar Rav Safra, Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So you have other Amoraim quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Amavir chefetzim mizavit lezavit. A person is carrying his furniture, his objects from one side of the house to the other side of the house. V'nimlach aleim. And after he picked it up to carry it to the other side of his house, he changed his mind. Votzian takes him out to Rishut Rabim. He's patur. Shlo hayta akira mishar rishona lekach. Because his original akira wasn't with the intent of taking it out to the Rishut Rabim. His original akira was to keep it in the house. That's not called an akira that you're going to be chayab for. And therefore you see the same din that Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting over here, which is, if you don't have an akira in the first place for a hotza'ah, that akira doesn't count, and you need a new akira, which means you need to stop and then start up again. And as Abaye told us, you have to stop to rest in order to be considered an amida, that's an anacha, and then an akira. But now we have Rabbi Yochanan saying it in two different contexts, saying the exact same din. And that would seem to be unnecessary. Usually you have a din from an amora. He says it once, he doesn't need to say it in multiple different forms and say the same din. Where it says, Amarai ninu, These are different Amoraim that are quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Mar Mar La B'Hai Lishna, Mar Mar La B'Hai Lishna. They both heard it from Rabbi Yochanan, but they presented the case, or they presented this din of Rabbi Yochanan in different ways. Not that they heard something different, Rabbi Yochanan only said it once, but their misora was that this is the way it was presented, or they presented Rabbi Yochanan's din in this way, and yes, they're saying the same din in different ways. But in the end, it's the same din of Rabbi Yochanan, which is that you need an Akirah, the Shem Hotza'ah, in order for it to be considered or classified as an Akirah. Right, we're going to stop here by the two dots in the bottom of Hey Amud Bet.